Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
What is that? That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home. They never go home, those boys.
That's... Yeah. They have asked for that, really.
Yeah, you can laugh. It was the World Cup.
I'm a little bit of an idealist, but having said that, I want to be like me.
You don't know what you're talking about.
What did you know?
I managed to stay alive for 6 days.
I'm going to need it there.
I'd say it to your face, and I'll say it to you now.
I'm down to Anfield, and we'll see them, won't we?
What you doing down here, you shawny man?
It was rather a good weekend for the humble art of the support run in the Premier League. I'm talking length of the field, lung-busting sprints with no guarantee you're going to get any reward at the end of it. Cesar Azpilicueta led the way by scorching up to smack in the first goal of the Thomas Tuchel era at Chelsea. Leeds United are obviously masters of this art, regardless of the situation in any match. A goal up, two goals down, doesn't matter. They're all coming at you, so it was no surprise to see Jack Harrison torching a few Leicester players on the way to tapping in an unselfish assist by Patrick Bamford, with Leeds already a goal up in their game. And arguably the most selfless example of the day, certainly the most pointless, was Jordan Henderson tearing forward from centre-back to support Mo Salah, who was not going to lay it off to Henderson in a million years, even if he completely failed to control Shaqiri's dipping pass. As it was, Salah controlled it exquisitely under the studs of his right boot before flicking it home with his left and leaving us all to admire Jordan Henderson's extremely impressive level of fitness. Welcome to Monday's Second Hands Football Podcast. Hi, Ken.
Owen, how are you?
Hi, Murph. How are you?
Hey, Owen. How's it going?
Will we give it to Henderson, the inaugural second captain's award for most selfless support run of the Premier League?
Most pointless support run.
Pointless?
It's Mo Salah. It's like Mo Salah will not pass the ball.
Well, it's not about passing the ball. It's about picking up the pieces. Mo Salah has been known to miss the odd chance. So he scores every chance that he gets. I mean, he gets plenty of them. And I think part of the reason that Mo Salah there was a statistic about him there. He's become the fifth Liverpool player to score 20 goals in four consecutive seasons, and the first to do that since Ian Rush. And one of the reasons why he's such a relentless goal scorer is that he seems to forget immediately about the chances that he misses. You know that Timo Werner thing that's happened? I've never seen that happen to Mo Salah. Mm. Where the player begins to be bogged down by the weight of the world. Oh no.
Well, it's funny, he was being asked a question pre-match about, I think the interviewer was trying to ask him, it must have been post-match actually.
It was post-match.
I think the interviewer was trying to ask him about
his barren
run. And then he just had to go, yeah, I don't like VAR. Yeah, I don't like, yeah. Well, it was nothing to do, the question was nothing to do with VAR.
I saw that and I thought at first that, okay, Salah has, I mean, because he didn't allow the interviewer from Sky to finish the question. And then he just started talking about VAR, and I thought, well, maybe he's misheard Barron. But then I thought, is he actually answering the question? I mean, he's basically saying, yeah, you know, you're talking about me having a Barron spell, but obviously I scored that goal against Tottenham in the last game, which they took off by VAR. Remember, that was the Firmino handball. Was that what he was saying, or did he just mishear? I don't know. One way or the other, he never answered the question about his Barron spell. It was as though he couldn't even hear the question. But you know, you're talking about Henderson getting there. You know, Henderson had been champing at the bit to do that all game, I think. You know, he's been standing there at centre back, occasionally chipping the ball over the top. And otherwise, just frustrated, not doing anything. Then suddenly he saw the chance to just have an absolute pelt up the other end of the pitch. Obviously, he was going to do it. You know what I mean? So, and that's how he got there to be first to celebrate Mo Salah. Inspiring, a remarkable piece by Jonathan Wilson. I don't know if you've seen this one, Owen.
Haven't seen it yet, no.
What? Jonathan Wilson, inspirational and always shouting, Henderson embodies Liverpool's spirit. Mohamed Salah's sublime skill saw off West Ham, but it would not have been possible without Liverpool's versatile captain. And Mr. Wilson there, who...
Where is Jordan Henderson born again? Sorry, I've just... It's probably completely irrelevant to the point you're making, Ken, but...
Henderson is from the football hotbed of the northeast of England. Actually, the particular part of the northeast of England he's from is actually the city of Sunderland. Proud coal mining city.
Gotcha.
Okay. Yeah, Salah was the obvious reason Liverpool beat West Ham. His two goals were both brilliant. But equally necessary was Henderson. He has become for Liverpool something more than a player. He is a captain of the most inspirational kind. Not just relentlessly energetic, but a constant cajoler and organiser, as these games behind closed doors have proved. The soundtrack to modern Liverpool is a constant wearside bark, as though a collie at Sheepdog Trials had decided to commentate on itself. But Henderson embodies something more. He has become the spirit of all that is best about the club. Somebody endlessly and selflessly willing to do what the team need rather than what necessarily comes most easily to him. So, absolute appreciation from a fellow Wearsider there. And, he could be... I mean, at this rate, Jordan Henderson's pretty nailed on probably to be the footballer of the year. I mean, he was last year. But I mean, the PFA, the real football, the real player of the year, the PFA player of the year. What do you think?
Jordan Henderson. God, there's one thing I've not thought about even for a second. Mo Salah is the top scorer in the Premier League.
If Mo Salah scores two goals in every game between now and the end of the season, Jordan Henderson is 100% going to win PFA player of the year.
Well, as James Milner apparently shouted, you better be careful. If you keep playing like this, you'll be centre-back for the rest of your career. Jurgen Klopp revealed that little zinger. Post-match yesterday as well. For Thomas Tuchel at Chelsea, a first win of his reign is hopefully enough to quieten the noise around his appointment for now. But as our World Service members are well aware, those voices will not remain quiet for long.
Ask Gary if he thinks like the publicity he's given young Frank here warrants it. Because personally, I don't think he's quite good enough yet. No, I also think that in the last couple of years you've let some good midfielders go for peanuts like Matt Holland and Scott Canham.
Well, no, they definitely wasn't good enough. I'll tell you now, you know, you can sit in front of all these people, I'll tell you, without any shadow of a doubt, there will be no comparison with what Frank Lampard will achieve in football and what Scotty Canham will achieve in football. And I may be now, I didn't want to say this in front of him, but he will go right to the very top. Right to the very top.
Well, there you are, you heard it here first.
He has given them belief. It's almost the perfect man management.
I love this club when we start the season wanting to win.
I'm convinced Frank Lampard will become England manager.
Frank Lampard's lost 8 games.
Well, I can't drag people out of the medical room.
But for some reason, hey, Frank's doing all right. Frank, maybe because he's English. I don't know.
Why do you think you're off the pace today?
I know, that's one for the players.
I'd love Frank Lampard to get the Chelsea job in 10 years' time.
Yeah. Frank's track record on CV went to Derby, didn't get promoted. But Frank's got all the answers for Chelsea. He hasn't.
I think for a journalist to be objective would be a big start.
Harry Redknapp joins us live this morning. Harry, good morning to you.
Good morning. People need time. You lose 4 or 5 games, it doesn't suddenly make you a bad manager. You're only as good as your players at the end of the day. And the players that are brought in, the two German players, have been massive disappointments. Yeah. Massive. I mean, you look at them, I'm not even sure, especially the centre forward, whether he's cut out for English football. You're only as good as your head of recruitment. If they're a bad judge, you're struggling because they're bringing you in bad players, average players, and you've got to get on with it. I've not yet seen a manager that can turn very average players into great players. I'm still looking to see somebody who can do that.
Well, there you are. You heard it here first.
I'll tell you now, there ain't no doubt about that, in my opinion.
That was a new audio bed that debuted on our Frank Lampard podcast last week. Harry has not been heard from, well, he might have been heard from already in the Thomas Tuchel reign. I haven't heard him yet. He hasn't quite gone viral enough, but it won't be long, I'm sure, before Harry really pipes up. You can hear that podcast in full if you become a member for 5 or a month plus VAT on secondcaptains.com. There's Premier League right through this week as well, which we'll obviously be right on top of. Next up for Chelsea on Thursday is a game against Tottenham. We'll talk about both those clubs with Jacob Steinberg and Alan Smith on today's podcast. There's also Six Nations next weekend, so we'll do a big chat about that tomorrow for World Service members. Again, that's with Shane and Andrew Trimble. Ken, you can report on some sport there if you don't mind.
Well, I'm Frank Lampard, or rather, Harry Redknapp has been speaking, of course, in his regular column in The Sun. I can't believe he missed this one. He reckons that the problem with Frank Lampard was the players that were brought in. But anyone thinking the manager is the one responsible for big money signings these days has the wrong idea of modern football, says Harry Redknapp in what I guess would have been news to a lot of readers in 2008. That is not how it works anymore, says Harry. Years ago, they would be the ones scouting players, watching them play, basically doing the deals. Not now, though. These days, it's pretty much all down to the head of recruitment, which means you're relying on someone else's judgment. When they're not an instant success, like the two Germans, Timo Werner and Kai Havertz, and the book stops with the boss. But I'm sure Frank isn't the one behind all the signings Chelsea have made. I'm saying the only one he was mad keen on getting was Ben Chilwell. That's how crazy the game has become.
well, you're only as good as your head of recruitment, as he says in the clip.
That's right, and he's basically repeating this here.
What point was Harry trying to make by mentioning how crazy an idea it is that Ben Chilwell was the only player Frank Lampard wanted to sign?
Ben Chilwell was the only one of those list of players that joined Chelsea that excited Frank Lampard. Ziyech, the Moroccan boy from Ajax, Ziyech, Werner, Havertz, or Chilwell. There's only one name that got Frank drooling out of those four. Now, I think the point he was making clearly was Chilwell was the only one that Frank Lampard actually wanted to sign, apparently. Which, I don't know, seems a bit strange. But look, I wasn't planning to mention Harry Redknapp. It was just that you...
Thank you for correcting me on that one. Yeah, yeah. No, he'd gone to ground, but Harry Redknapp is still talking and still a presence in the English football media landscape.
Tuchel's got a hell of a job on his hands. They tell me he's a great coach, but if you manage Paris Saint-Germain, then you win the league. It's as simple as that. He says they lost, actually, I believe, Paris Saint-Germain last night. But that's what happened there. Now, the main story today, or the biggest story, I guess, around the world of football is how is it possible that the situation at Barcelona could get even worse and even more hostile than it already was? And the answer is we see what we had over the weekend, where mysteriously the details of Lionel Messi's contract leak into the newspaper El Mundo Deportivo and are published under the headline. Well, under the headline actually is 555. That's the three-digit number. 555-237-619. That's not a telephone number, Owen. That is the sum of 555,237,619 euros, which is, as it's described underneath, El contrato ferronico de Messi que arruina al Barça. Now, what do you think that means?
Sounds like it could be the contract given to Messi that has ruined Barcelona financially.
The ferronic contract, Owen, meaning suitable for
Pharaoh,
the god king of ancient Egypt. this is the ferronic contract that they have given Leo Messi, which has ruined Barcelona. That is the headline. On this, I'd say it's a headline more than anything else, which would piss Messi off, because the actual sum isn't that much of a surprise. It's like a little bit more than we thought Lionel Messi was getting, a little bit more, but not much more. They've got a full breakdown of his bonuses, which are sort of interesting. Basic pay 61,328,000 euros. Basic pay, okay.
Over how long are we talking about?
That's for a game. For a year, for a season.
Yeah.
Not for a game. 61,328,520 for, that's your basic. Playing 60% of games, then that's a bonus of 1.656 million euros. Champions League group stage, that's another 1.656 billion euros bonus. Get to the second round of that competition, that's another 946 grand. Make the quarters, that's 1.419 million. Semis, that's another 1.419 million. get to the final. That's another cool 1.419 million euros, 461 as well. Just to add in there to the 1.419 million. And then win the Champions League. That's 3.548 million euros for a total of Champions League bonuses is around 10 million. To win La Liga, by contrast, is worth 2.365 million. So four times as much bonuses for winning the Champions League as winning. I'm surprised at the disparity there. Well, you know, I'm not surprised that they value the Champions League more than La Liga, but how much more is a bit of a surprise to me. He only needs to effectively get to the second round of the Champions League to make as much money in bonuses as he does for winning.
That's what strikes me as amazing, that you're getting bonuses as Leo Messi at Barcelona for making it through the group stage of the Champions League. It's not like, I mean, I'd be saying, Leo, score 65 goals this season and, you know, we'll...
But what if he bangs in 11 goals, you know, against Malmo or something in the first group stage, and then somehow or other they fail? You know, those payments are all there because every time you reach another stage of the Champions League,
you get money.
You're getting money. So Barcelona are getting the money, and then they're giving it to Leo Messi. That's how this works. He also gets 591 grand for winning the Spanish Cup, 591 grand for winning FIFA the Best Award. 97 million for signing bonus. Jeez. 97 million signing bonus. And then if he completes the contract, it's 4 years of contract on this pay scheme, he gets another 66 million euros as a loyalty bonus, right? Oh, but that's not all. He also gets image rights. That's 10.8 million euros basic. And then a series of further bonuses, again, along the same lines, for playing 60% of games, 292 grand Champions League group stage, 166 grand second round, 250 grand quarters, 250 grand semis, 250 grand final, 626 grand to win, 417 grand to win the league, 104 grand to win the cup, 104 grand. I mean, why do they even bother paying him 104 grand to win the FIFA the Best Award, and then 17 million signing bonus, and then 11 million loyalty bonus and image rights? So the total comes to 555 million, of which apparently he's going to collect, in all likelihood, 511 million. So most of it, more than half a billion euros. Anyway, he's super pissed off about this, as you can imagine. And it's mainly because, not necessarily because of the details of the contract, you know, like it's a scandal that he gets paid so much. Although, you know, there'll be differing opinions, I think, as to whether he's really delivered that money. Like, I think it works out at about 3.5 million euros per goal, which is quite expensive. That really is a lot. It's a lot. But it's more the implication that it's this that has caused the ruin of Barcelona, because Barcelona are in big trouble. They released their accounts just last week, and it's showing that their losses have increased to 173 million negative operating profit, 97 million profit after tax. Nearly 100 million euro loss, and that's for a season which was only partly affected by COVID-19, not this season, in which there hasn't been a fan yet at a game in the Camp Nou. So it appears as though somebody at Barcelona has leaked the details of Messi's contract in order to basically say, well, I mean, there's your problem. There's your problem. But, you know, the fact is that Barcelona, I mean, Lionel Messi is Barcelona. I mean, he has been for many years now. I mean, he has become sort of synonymous with the club. If he has got too big for the club, if he has become too expensive, and if they are paying him too much, paying him more than he's actually worth, that was their decision to do that. They were the ones who decided to do it. It wasn't Messi who was able to write the contract that he then signed. They gave him this contract in order for him to stay there. And the reason that they were prepared to pay him so much was because they figured he was worth it. He was making more for them. I mean, if you look at their commercial income in 2019, it's 384 million euros, which is a vast sum. I mean, you know, look around the world of football. There's not many clubs on this type of money. They are the number one revenue-making club in football. And why is that?
Because of Lionel Messi.
Well, I mean, he's the biggest single reason, I would say. I mean, it really is kind of remarkable that they've managed to just make things even worse than they previously were. But apparently, Messi is now intent on suing members of the board at Barcelona, as well as the newspaper. I don't know really how Messi's really going to sue the newspaper. What there is a press release from Barcelona. They published this yesterday. Said FC Barcelona categorically denies any responsibility in the publication of his professional contract with the club. In view of the information published today in the newspaper El Mundo in relation to the professional contract signed between FC Barcelona and the player Lionel Messi, the club regrets its publication, given that it is a private document governed by the principle of confidentiality between the parties. FC Barcelona categorically denies any responsibility for the publication of this document and will take appropriate legal action against the newspaper El Mundo for any damage that may be caused as a result of this publication. FC Barcelona expresses its absolute support for Lionel Messi, especially in the face of any attempt to discredit his image and to damage his relationship with the entity where he has worked to become the best player in the world and in football history. Okay, well, so you're saying it is his contract then? You know, there's no doubt, there's no longer any doubt, this is Lionel Messi's contract. So I don't know if that really helped much.
Is there any argument anywhere along the way that Leo Messi could have looked at some of these contracts and thought, would I be better served shaving a little bit off here, leaving a few bonuses, taking a few million less here and there, and leaving a bigger pot with which my club Barcelona can buy the supporting cast I need around me successful? I'm looking at Tom Brady here, Business Insider article from when he left the Patriots. Brady, of course, back in the Super Bowl this week with Tampa Bay. But Tom Brady sacrificed at least $60 million in his career helping the Patriots build Super Bowl winning rosters. Brady frequently took contract extensions and restructured his deals to help the Patriots address other positions, giving up at least $60 million in his career and maybe as much as $100 million. Sorry, Murph.
Well, I would say, I don't know, if you were Leo Messi, would you trust Barcelona to spend that money all that wisely? I mean,
well, that's the problem, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, and as for the Tom Brady, I absolutely accept the comparison there on. The only thing is, I think that if Tom Brady restructures deals to ensure that he has an amazing offensive line, you know, the line of big guys in there to protect him from getting his head torn off. I mean, Tom Brady has like a visceral, you know, he has actual skin in the game to ensure that those guys are really good at their job, because otherwise he gets hit on the head a lot. And I think that it's easier for him to restructure his deals when it's like, if I don't do this, I'm going to be in a lot more pain for a lot longer of my career. And my career is going to be a lot shorter. Whereas if these guys get paid enough, they're going to work hard enough for me to not get, you know, clouded on the head.
It's also a different business model. It's much easier for Tom Brady to sit down with Bob Kraft or Bob Kraft's son or whoever it is, and they look over the really defined salary cap and they work out how much is needed to sign certain players, and he's told this is what's going to happen. It's a different kind of a model in American sport compared to in the Premier League, where first of all, Leo Messi doesn't have the positive relationship with people at the club to have that kind of a relationship, and also might not have any interest in that side of things, where it seems like Brady possibly did. And ultimately it does boil down to, okay, where are they going to throw this money if I do leave it? But I'm just throwing it out there. Maybe it's something to consider, Ken. I don't know.
Well, it's not something he's considering, Owen. If recent stories are to be believed coming out of Barcelona, because here's another story that recently came out, which was about, you know, Eric Garcia, the Man City player Barcelona want to sign. Yep. So Barcelona are trying to sign him, right? Trying to scramble together 3 million euros to pay for Eric Garcia. But then it turns out that Eric Garcia would also have to agree to defer his salary until the end of the season because Barcelona didn't have enough money to actually pay him. Apparently Barcelona players get paid twice a year, like once every 6 months, and they didn't have enough money. They've apparently not paid the players' salaries in full in the most recent tranche of salaries they had to pay. And in the case of Garcia, they wouldn't be paying him at all. for 6 months. He's joining Barcelona, a club which recently, until very recently, was throwing around money on, you know, Coutinho and Dembele and Griezmann, and they don't have enough money to pay this guy, who's certainly not on a 555 million euro contract. So this is a club that's like in financial freefall, in meltdown, and I think Messi, if Messi was to say at this point, actually, you know what? Why don't you keep some of my money? Maybe he feels that would play into the narrative that this is all his fault, which I really think he strongly feels it's not his fault. This is really not. And the other thing that's happening in La Liga is Atletico Madrid are running away with it. We got to see a rarely seen sight. I mean, when I say Atletico Madrid are running away with it, they're 10 points clear at the top of La Liga with a game in hand on Barcelona. And we got to see the rarely seen sight of Luis Suarez scoring a majestic free kick. We haven't seen much of it over the last few seasons because Lionel Messi takes all. I mean, Messi scored a free kick himself over the weekend. But Suarez is the top scorer in La Liga with 14 goals. And Barcelona continue to pay part of Luis Suarez's salary. They can't pay Eric Garcia, who in fact won't be joining because they don't have enough money to make the deal happen. However, they are paying Luis Suarez to win the league for Atletico Madrid. I mean, I know that we talked about this in the summer, and you know, I was of the opinion that Suarez was one of those who should leave Barcelona. And of course, that looks rather foolish now that he's gone to Atletico and is banging in the goals, which are going to, it looks like, win Atletico. I mean, it would be a big surprise at this point if they do not win the league, right? So that's misfired. Now, first of all, I'll say I wouldn't have sold him to Atletico Madrid.
That seemed a little bit. Sell it to the man who has made his entire career out of stoking hatred and vengeance.
Well, and, I mean, and that's, Luis Suarez, you know, that's your opinion. Oh, you mean? Oh, you were talking about, you know, Simeone.
Simeone, like, you know, okay, I mean, right. Or like, what would Diego Simeone and Luis Suarez if they got together? I mean, you know, like, what might happen here if you happen to if you're in the same league as the club that you've just left? I mean, come on.
Yeah, I mean, he did look like a good fit. Like, Simeone might be able to do quite well with Suarez, you know what I mean? Like,
what angle should I take with Luis Suarez, I wonder, in my management style this year?
Yeah, but you know, he has. I think it's important to remember that the team that he's got around him at Atletico is more suitable. Like that if Suarez and Messi were still playing together, I don't think you necessarily see the same kind of production from Suarez. I think he needs to play with more mobile teammates in order to deliver this kind of production. You see, do you see the point that I'm making?
Yes.
Like, yeah, you're trying to make it that you were still right in the summer, even though you've been
backing very slowly away from the car crash
I can't be proven wrong. I mean, the only way I could have been proven wrong would be if Suarez had stayed at Barcelona and had succeeded, and himself and Messi had continued to had got back to their old form and you know, rolled back the years and scored goal after goal. I was saying that couldn't happen. You can't have too many of these old players all in the same team. And if you look at Atletico's team, there's nobody over 30 apart from Suarez. And Trippier is the only other player over 30 who's got more than 1,000 minutes in the team. And he's got players like João Felix and Marcos Llorente who are basically doing his running for him and allowing him to concentrate on what he's good at, which is, as we all know, scoring goals. So, yes. Meanwhile, I saw a quote from Neymar saying, well, actually, I don't really know what it is that's changed, but I feel very happy at PSG now and wish to stay here for a long time. So I don't know if that was related to the news that he can see coming out of Barcelona, but it does appear that he's not going to be going back to Spain at any time soon. Like the Spanish big two have cratered in a big way. Like, this is a major shift in the balance of power of European football for the forthcoming years, for the next couple of years. Yeah. These teams do no longer have the automatic gravitational pull of being the best clubs in the world that they've enjoyed pretty much for the last 20 years. That is over for now. And I suppose we have to wait and see where else this sort of, the economic damage is obviously going to be huge all over European football, but Barcelona have fallen further than most.
What about the Premier League, Ken, where the financial clout still reigns supreme? Yeah.
Well, in the Premier League, what's going on? Well, Rich Dolly always has the best statistics. Brighton's last three home wins have come in 2019, 2020, and 2021. So, Jose Mourinho's Tottenham going down to Brighton, which was not good. And Jose almost, I was surprised by him afterwards because I thought, okay, right, this is all gone bad now. You know, since the Liverpool game, remember when they went into that Liverpool game at Anfield and they were looking like title contenders at the time. Since then, it's 2 wins, 3 draws, 4 defeats.
Hmm.
They're playing Chelsea on Thursday. That could be, it's looking a lot like that's going to be 2 wins, 3 draws, 5 defeats. And that's to Chelsea as well. You know, which is a bad team to lose to when you're Tottenham.
Even though they've done a lot of it over the years.
Even though Tottenham have done a lot of losing to Chelsea, they have, but it never gets any easier. And Harry Kane is injured, as we know, in both ankles, although apparently he thinks he's going to be back in a couple of weeks. So it's not like a massive, you know, 3 month type of he's wiped out for the season type of injury. But
that's
still,
Thiago bite your legs Alcantara's work, wasn't it?
Well, no,
I mean, that fella loves a tackle, I have to say.
Well, the new Juan Sebastian Varane, you mean? This was I heard Gary Neville saying that in the commentary on the West Ham Liverpool game. I thought, really, is that Varane? Is that a? Do you think that's a good comparison? I mean, I don't think so. I mean, Juan Sebastian Varane was a British transfer record at the time, and he was the most expensive player ever signed by a Premier League club. And he came into a team which. Well, you know, had been pretty dominant, and it didn't really work out, and they had their worst season in several seasons with him in the team before recovering to win the league the following year. I don't really think the Thiago thing can be compared to him, though, because I don't really think you can judge whether Thiago has been a success at Liverpool yet, because there have been so many injuries, not least to Thiago. Like, I mean, he has missed most of the season, you know, with the injury that he suffered against Everton. I mean, it's only last week that he won his first match that he started, but was it only his eighth? Was it his seventh game or something like that? I mean, I was thinking about it. I was like, well, how can you, like, if Liverpool are playing worse this season than last season, yes, but there are a lot of, I would have thought, good reasons for that, which aren't related to signing a brilliant midfielder like Thiago. Would you not say that, like, losing, like, all their defenders is a more likely reason for...
Yeah, but I think what happens is that you know, Liverpool are on TV a lot and people talk about them a lot, and there's only so much you can say about the missing players. It just gets repetitive. You know, Van Dijk, of course, it's Gomez, all
these players.
So then
you have to start making up reasons. Once everyone's got bored of the actual reasons, you have to start speculating.
Yeah, I guess it is speculation to a certain extent, but, I mean, is that not what a lot of football punditry is? Yeah, I mean, it should be informed speculation, but a lot of the speculation nonetheless, because nobody knows 100% exactly what makes a team tick or what makes a team improve or disimprove. But all you can do is look at a player like this who's a very different sort of player to what they've had before in that position and try to work out how he's going so far. But I agree with you. It's impossible to make definitive judgments. Completely impossible. But you might as well make partial judgments on a match-by-match basis or else we're not talking about anything.
Yeah, and the statistic that outlines just how kind of threadbare the argument is and yet how, you know, it's there is a thread there is the stat that you just said there. I mean, he played 7 games before he won his first game playing for Liverpool. And Liverpool obviously, you know, won all but one of their first 30 games last year, wasn't it?
Yeah. He did win games, but he hadn't started these games. Like, for instance, he was involved in the Chelsea game that they won early in the season. Maybe one of the other games. The Everton game was the second game that he played, and they didn't win that game, but I don't think it was necessarily his fault for disturbing everything.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, like... referring to him as kind of Juan Sebastian Varon type of signing after 7 games or 8 games or 9 games. I mean, it's just not enough time to judge it. But at the same time, like, that's the point that's made. I mean, there's probably more than one reason why Liverpool have lost or drawn as many games as they have this year. The big one is Virgil van Dijk. But yeah, you can cast the net a little wider than
that. To be honest, I think they're lucky that they have him. You know, imagine they didn't have him. Imagine they'd sold Wijnaldum to Barcelona, incidentally. Well, first of all, Wijnaldum wouldn't be getting paid. Secondly, he's the only player who hasn't been injured. Like, it's incredible. I say that now thinking, well, you know, I hope I don't curse this man. He hasn't been injured since 2014. Like, it's just absolutely unbelievable. I thought that himself and Thiago play really well together against West Ham. David Moyes was getting criticised after this game. I honestly couldn't work out why. Like, what was David Moyes supposed to do? Like, you know, that the West Ham's approach to the game was too defensive.
Well, he did. Far be it from me to ever criticise my close personal friend David Moyes, but I did think it didn't augur particularly well pre-match when he was being interviewed. And he said, I hope you're not going to try and put us at Liverpool's level. I mean, that's just ridiculous. We're nowhere near their level, which is fair enough. But then at one stage he said something like, sure, we're going to try and give them a game if we can, you know? Yeah. It seemed a little bit like the David Moyes put a dampener down on things in advance. So maybe that was playing into people's minds when they saw that they didn't really do. Well, you know, you didn't see any of their good players play well. You didn't see Declan Rice play particularly well, get on the ball much. You didn't see any sort of great... I mean, like, Liverpool have been attacked by
nobody
teams
is going
not
to get
as good
on
as
the
West
ball
Ham.
Much. This is the point. Nobody is going to get on the ball much if the other team has got Thiago and Wijnaldum in midfield. It's not going to happen. You know what I mean? It's like, Declan Rice. Well, how's Declan Rice going to dictate the game when these guys have the ball? So you know, this is what I'm saying. I think they're lucky to have him. You know, in the case of Varane, when he came in, he was sort of competing with players who were available. You know, I wonder actually, in retrospect, if a lot of the reason that we remember Juan Varane as being crap and destabilizing the Man United team was that nobody really paid enough attention to the fact that Alex Ferguson had an absolute... I don't know what exactly you'd call it. He didn't like Yapstam's stupid book. And he booted Yapstam out of the club, mystifyingly, just before the 2001-2 season. And he claimed that Yapstam, I remember him coming out with some old nonsense about Yapstam and how he thought Yapstam, basically Yapstam was on his last legs. You know, and he had to go, and we have to get him out the door before he, you know, while we can still get some money for him, sort of thing, you know. And he boots him out. Yep, Sam continues to dominate at Champions League level for the next several years. And Laurent Blanc, who was the guy Ferguson signed to immediately replace him, was a total disaster in the Premier League. You know, I mean, I remember Craig Bellamy rushing past him, like Blanc going down, collapsing like a burning building. You know what I mean? And Varane somehow ended up being the villain of that season. It was like, see, ever since Varane has come in, Manchester United's defensive stability seems to have completely vanished. They're conceding goals to everybody. You know, they've suddenly developed a real glass jaw. And you're kind of like, yeah, okay, I'm thinking about it. But they did. When I think about what were the outstanding qualities of this Man United team over the previous few seasons, the sort of granite-jawed Dutch... this Dutch ogre at the heart of the defense had something to do with it, and he was the guy who was booted out. But Varane is the one who gets the blame. You know, there's all of this stuff about, oh, does Thiago slow down the tempo? And you've got a similar situation going on behind Liverpool's midfield, where what used to be the midfield is now playing in defense. You know, these are the things that actually affect the thing. So rather than say, well, it must be Thiago's fault, you know, it's because of his weird style. He just wants to, like, dwell on the ball, like, you know, just like hogging the ball while the game goes on around him. I mean, you know, look at the other things that are happening out there. The cheek.
Make me a scapegoat, if you will. Call me a traitor, if you will.
Can you believe that? Can you believe the Brits?
Please, let's save the country.
They're saying Rory McIlroy is a Brit. You know.
If the price of freedom, the price of peace, is the blackening of my name.
The chicken.
At
Bradley Peart.
Right, we've got a good bit to get into here with Jacob Steinberg of The Guardian and Alan Smith, who joins us, Alan of football.london. We have been discussing, discussing Barcelona on today's show and their appalling financial situation, but I am interested as to some of the... I'm going to stop beating around the bush here. I want to ask about Spurs, Alan, because that's got to be an anxious chairman there, Daniel Levy, with his billion-pound stadium freshly opened in a pandemic without football crowds for nearly a year now and counting. And it also seems like Levy might have a decision to make about his manager. There's some rumblings there that Jose might not be long for this Tottenham world.
I was thinking about this last night in terms of sort of if Mourinho was in, say, a Chelsea position like this and the ruthless manner in which Chelsea got rid of Lampard last week. And you kind of think that if the financial situation at Spurs was comparable to Chelsea, that, you know, the focus and scrutiny around Mourinho would be far more intense. But I mean, it's a complete, like, as Antonio Conte famously called a Mourinho season, I think we're beginning to see the first seeds of it being sown. It reminded me sort of the beginning of the end at Chelsea, and obviously the third season at Manchester United last night, where without Kane, there's, you know, no attacking plan. Yes, defensive resilience is, you know, all well and good, but if you don't sort of have that attacking identity, then I think you're completely, you know, you're not going to be a top four team in this Premier League, are you?
The only thing about it being typical Mourinho is it's not so typical at the moment in his response. Like I saw him last night after the match, and it all seemed a little bit meek, didn't it? You know, he's like, oh, well, we're not good enough in the first half. My boys did okay in the second. This kind of nonsense. Like, that's not. Where's the explosion?
Well, I think when he was unveiled as Spurs manager, he spoke about his 11 months off and how he'd learned from past mistakes. And is that perhaps him, you know, that meek response last night, him sticking to the, you know, I did learn something, I'm a new man, I've changed, maybe.
It's like, yeah, he already wrote the script for this job, and as part of this movie script, he has to be the nice guy.
Yeah, and exactly. And I do wonder if there's going to be another couple of results. I mean, the Chelsea game on Thursday night is already one that you can imagine. If they end up losing that, he could go back to old Mourinho. You might see a player or two chucked under the bus. But even then, like, thinking about it now, I still remember, like, when they went to Stamford Bridge last season, when, you know, there were injury problems at that time, but he was quite happy to throw a couple of players under the bus last season as well, when, you know, Ndombele, Dele Alli both sort of got a minor dose in the grand scheme of things compared to, you know, what we've seen from Mourinho in the distant past. But yeah, I mean, I'm not 100% buying this new man sort of shtick yet. I think another defeat or two and we might see an explosion.
Jacob, do you think that their problem is, as he was saying last night, just a matter of like a lack of self-esteem or sadness? Like he seemed to be sort of portraying them as like... It seemed to me almost when he was talking about Tottenham, he had Timo Werner in mind, like this sad and bedraggled figure who hasn't scored in a long time and, you know, doesn't look like a top striker, but he is a top striker. Like he this is the phrase that Mourinho used. He didn't actually mention Timo Werner by name, but like it seemed as though he was kind of trying to portray Tottenham as just having this weird yips, like this crisis of confidence, as opposed to their problem being something a bit more serious than that.
Maybe they're sad because they're playing quite sad, depressing football at the moment. I think that this is something that you could maybe see coming even when there were good times and we thought that Mourinho was maybe proving a lot of worried people wrong in October and November when they got to the top of the league. But you could kind of see it in some of the games against the smaller sides, which sometimes it required a late winner to break through. There was that lack of creativity. You know, a lot of it was very dependent on the counter-attacking link between Harry Kane and Son, obviously, and against the smaller sides. If that wasn't necessarily clicking, then you were worried about them breaking teams down. So there were, you know, there's a late win against West Brom, there was a late win against Burnley away, and then there was the game against Brighton, which was maybe a sign of things to come at home, which was end of October, start of November, where it was an early goal from Tottenham. They looked very good for about 15, 20 minutes at the start of the game, and then it kind of faded away and Brighton got back into it. It took a late goal for Spurs to win that one. So, you know, there were those little signs there that maybe this is something that had limits for Spurs, that for a title challenge there needed to be more. And you started to see that with the games against Palace, the late equaliser where Spurs just didn't do anything, and then, you know, bring it through to the Liverpool game, the Wolves game, late goals, and last week, in the last couple of weeks, that game against Fulham where they were just really played off the park for in the second half by a team battling against relegation, where Tottenham just didn't do anything. They just let games slip away from them. I wonder if that mindset has probably held them back. And you wonder at times when you look at the resources available to Mourinho, I don't think that it's entirely... I don't think it absolutely has to be dependent on Harry Kane staying fit, which, you know, we always know that there's the risk of him getting injured given his history. But it seems like that's what it's all based on. And if it's not there, it all kind of fades away. And that approach from him, you know, which is entirely based on what I think is individually a fairly average defence compared to, you know, what you would hope for at the top level, is probably something that is holding them back. And when they come into a game like last night, you can tell that everybody's feeling a bit sorry for themselves, because it's, what are we going to do? We don't have our best striker, who also happens to be our only player who's allowed to really do anything in a playmaking sense. But, you know, is that something that really has to happen when you've got someone as creative in midfield as Ndombele?
Or, you know, you've got well, what they thought they had in Gareth Bale. I mean, the game that you mentioned against Brighton that they won with a late goal, that was Bale's goal, his only goal. I think
absolutely. They it's probably his only goal in the league.
His only league goal. Yeah, he scored four altogether, but only one
in that game. That game against Brighton. I remember writing that, you know, if Gareth Bale is going to come on and maybe lift some of the load off Son and Kane, then, you know, this could be a masterstroke. It's just not really happening.
Well, what did you make then of Souness? I'm sure you've seen what Souness has been saying about Bale. This is actually before the game, and Bale then went on to deliver a great non-performance in the game, was subbed off after an hour. But his point basically was that Bale is just sitting there, and he seems a bit too contented to not play and never really get off the bench, and that if Souness was in his position, he would throw the toys out of the pram, because for Gareth Bale at this point, it's about self-preservation. He was at Real Madrid and got the reputation for being more interested in golf than football, and with the way that he's behaving, meekly accepting being left out of the team the whole time, it's beginning to look like that impression was accurate.
Quite possibly. It takes different kinds of personalities, doesn't it? I don't think Gareth Bale is like Graeme Souness, so I don't think we're going to see Gareth Bale throw the toys out of the pram and have some kind of explosive showdown with Mourinho. But that impression that was created at Real Madrid, you wonder at times there was the perception that Zidane treated him unfairly there. But now you're starting to wonder, is that something that maybe does fit with Bale? You know, precisely how interested is he in you know, having that top career in at the high end of the game now? You know, there's a theory that perhaps he's saving himself a little bit for the Euros with Wales in the summer, that he doesn't want to push himself too hard given his injury record. And you wonder as well, after everything he's achieved, whether he has that same drive, whether he has the same hunger to, you know, to push himself, and as well, whether he is just simply capable of being the same kind of player. That explosiveness, the pace that we once associated him with, it doesn't seem to be there anymore. And, you know, he could reinvent himself in that kind of number nine kind of role that sort of Ronaldo's ended up putting himself into when his pace started to ebb away a little bit. But it's not really happening for him at the moment at Spurs at all.
What do you reckon, Alan, about Bale? I mean, are we writing off the Gareth Bale experiment at Spurs, if that's what it is?
I don't know what the rest of you think, but it looked like he was almost relieved coming off last night. It just seemed like, you know, he's not completely interested. And I do actually think there might be something in the idea of him sort of preserving himself for the Euros, should the Euros actually, you know, if it actually happens in the summer. But, you know, we've seen that playing for Wales for some time now, and yes, there were extenuating circumstances during his time at Real Madrid, but Wales, it just seemed to, it meant more to him. You know, there's more passion, there's more drive. And I do wonder if there is something perhaps in that. But I think Jacob's point about, you know, he if he's physically capable of hitting the heights that he'd hit in the past. You know, he's 31 years old. He's a player who broke through at quite a young age. You know, there was a huge emphasis on his athletic and physical ability. And, you know, we've seen it quite often with those players who break through when they're, you know, still a teenager, that their dip as they get older, you know, they kind of wane a little bit, a bit quicker than, say, I don't know, steady players who kind of progress, you know, gradually throughout. But I do feel like, you know, there's a comparison with obviously very different players, but the kind of the Rooney situation, where Rooney kind of managed to change his role. Ronaldo, again, is another, you know, comparison where they've, you know, they've been able to move into different positions and still contribute in different ways. And I don't think Bale is necessarily capable of doing that.
But what's it? I mean, this idea, Alan, of him potentially saving himself for the Euros, which may or may not happen, by the way. I mean, I'm sure that'll probably happen in some guys. But he's also, I mean, what is he expecting to win the Euros with Wales? I don't know exactly. It seems mad. He's playing at Tottenham. I mean, that logic would make sense if he was playing, if his club career had dropped significantly and he was down scrapping around in the relegation places with you know, Fulham or something like this. But he's playing for Tottenham with a chance to qualify for the Champions League. It seems bizarre that, and I know we're only theorising here, but it would seem bizarre to me that he has to save himself for a tournament that may or may not happen in the summer.
Well, Wales did quite well in the last European Championships.
They did. I know, and here, listen, we're hardly in a position to be slagging off Wales. I mean, I just don't see why he can't worry about, the Euros when the Euros are on.
He won the Champions League that season, didn't he? Well, I mean, he was injured for the final, but, you know, I mean, it's not like he just slept for the entire season and then got up and got to the semifinals of the Euros.
No, but it's just a... I think it's a 4-5 years on since then, we've seen a gradual, you know, a decline as such in terms of he's had injury problems. There are those questions over whether he's still physically capable of performing to that level. And I think, you know, the mental and psychological side, where is that motivation there? And he's the only one who'll be able to, you know, properly answer that.
Well, as a judge of sort of athletic horse flesh, what is your expert opinion on Gareth Bale, just as a specimen of running? Forget everything to do with football, forget motivation, forget whether he's really thinking about golf. Just when you look at Bale move, are you like thinking, yes, this looks right?
Well, he's a fast twitch fiber guy, isn't he? Where, you know, those type of players, the injuries are far more common, and he has had his injury problems as well, which, you know, only he and the medical staff that have treated him can accurately say how that's impacted on him, the wear and tear. You know, has that ground him down? We don't know. I mean, does he have to come out and kind of say that? I don't know, but I just get this sort of the sense that there isn't, you know, there's a clear decline, and it's a simple case of, does he actually want it?
There's a moment when he came on against Liverpool, which in the last, you know, where you thought that this was the stage for him to come on at half-time with Kane injured, and instead they brought on Lamella, and he came on obviously with about 10 minutes to go, and he got the ball on the right, and he just smacked the ball out for a goal kick to no one in particular. It just sort of trundled out kind of sadly, and that gave me the impression of maybe a player who's just not that dialed in at the moment mentally as well.
Yeah. Well, it's, you know, it's all heading to this sort of showdown on Thursday with Chelsea and Thomas Tuchel, which has the look of potentially being a very painful evening for Tottenham. I mean, maybe if it is just self-esteem, maybe they can shake it off. Maybe self-preservation will kick in this game or whatever. But at the moment, Jacob, I think you'd have to say Chelsea look heavy favourites to win the game. I mean, Thomas Tuchel's team still hasn't faced a shot on target in two games, which is pretty good. What kind of an impression do you think he's made so far?
Yeah, well, just to say that obviously the expectation around that game completely changes because of the managerial change and also Kane being out. I think if Frank Lampard had been in charge and Harry Kane had been available for Tottenham, I think we could all imagine how that may well have played out, you know, Spurs on the counter-attack.
Did the double over Tottenham last season?
They weren't as good as they were last season, were they? Chelsea under Lampard. But it's a huge game for Chelsea now, because they've got themselves level with Tottenham, who still have the game in hand. But they are looking as well, you know, it's encouraging signs under Tuchel. I think, you know, that first game was a bit of a hysterical reaction in certain quarters to the selection from Tuchel, where he only played one academy player, which was obviously a disgrace in the eyes of some people. He played a 3-4-3 system, which was obviously, again, seemed like it was just a little bit too smart from this foreign man who ousted the club legend from Stamford Bridge. But yesterday, with a bit more time on the training ground and against a team who actually have struggled against Chelsea in the last couple of seasons, they were impressive once they got the goal from Azpilicueta. And that goal was a sign maybe of what you will come to expect from Chelsea. You know, players popping up in surprising positions. It was Azpilicueta running, you know, what was he, 30, 31, from, you know, the right centre-back role from the back three all the way up the pitch to support the attack, which came, funnily enough, from two academy players, Mount and Hudson-Odoi. So maybe it's not a complete drama for the academy that he didn't pick players in the first game. And, you know, great pass from Hudson-Odoi. And then it's the centre-back popping up to score the first goal. And then later on, it's a player who was discarded under Lampard in Alonso, comes back into the team, you know, because he's actually quite good at left wing back, getting in there to score. So that change of position, the rotation of the movement was very encouraging yesterday. You know, Hudson-Odoi, a player who under Lampard was treated quite harshly, never really got a run in the team despite the obvious talent. He looks reborn at right wing back. He was brilliant yesterday. The Burnley players couldn't handle him. They made it quite clear to Sean Dyche when he was telling them to get closer that they simply couldn't because he was so
Robbie
good.
Brady shouted something like, I know where he is, I just can't fucking stop him.
Yeah, and they couldn't. I mean, Chelsea should have scored more. He put in so many great crosses. He hit the post, and that's one of those players which you're looking at and thinking, what were you doing, Frank? He's brilliant. Why couldn't you find a position for him in the team? Why didn't you give him a proper run? And there's probably the board who are sitting there thinking at Chelsea, we actually went to quite great lengths to get this player under a long-term contract when obviously Bayern Munich were trying to sign him. And funnily enough, another team who were trying to sign him in 2019 happened to be PSG, who were managed by Thomas Tuchel. So, you know, there you go. I think that he had a good idea of what was going on in Chelsea's academy. You know, that idea that that a foreign manager would simply come in and rip up everything that happened with the kids, I think probably overlooks the fact that we've seen quite a lot of German teams and German managers try to bring young English players to the Bundesliga in the last couple of years. So he's fully aware of what Hudson-Odoi could do. And that change as well at half-time with, you know, it hadn't quite worked in the first half with Abraham up front in the as the number nine, you know, bringing on Pulisic, and suddenly there was just all these little tricky, fast players running at Burnley and changing positions in the front three. They couldn't handle it. It's very encouraging.
What are your thoughts, Alan, on that Chelsea-Spurs game? Your early thoughts at this stage?
I think Chelsea probably do go into it as quite clearly as the favourites, but I'm interested in that Tuchel's first two games were against teams that set up incredibly defensively. I can pretty much guarantee that Mourinho is going to set up in similar fashion on Thursday evening. In terms of Chelsea, like, it's clear that even in the past two games, I know people were sort of, you know, quite bored by that Wolves game, but as much of that was down to Wolves' own sort of conservative setup. But Chelsea already have this attacking identity that I don't think we saw under Lampard, where Lampard was, you know, he was constantly changing, you know, the shape. He was changing personnel. He didn't really know where to move them. And even though yesterday, I think, you know, Werner quite clearly, in terms of confidence, he's shot. But there were attempts from Tuchel yesterday to sort of move him into the role where he thrived at Leipzig. So already you see there's a shape and there's an idea. And I did enjoy that the first goal, you know, there was so much kind of made of Tuchel being, you know, coming in and talking about double sixes and single sixes and, you know, the great English football men being upset by his mentions of recoveries. But then to see the first goal as a tribute to sort of Chris Wilder's Sheffield United with the overlapping centre-back was quite a nice touch from him, I reckon. But, you know, beyond that, I think it is promising, but there are some question marks, and I think we need to kind of wait until Chelsea play a team that are willing to attack them before we make any sort of firm judgments.
Yeah, well, Tuchel himself doesn't seem under any illusions. I think he's already been on the record saying if it doesn't work out in a short space of time, I'll be gone. He's no doubts about that. Listen, great stuff. Alan Smith, Jacob Steinberg, brilliant. Thank you.
Cheers.
From Ireland's Second Captain Show. Second Captain Show.
It's the best thing in the world for you because it's full of protein. Protein.
This is not a dig at football people who know the game.
No respect, no honour.
Put your respect on my name.
Dog shit's a bad arm.
But who plays rugby?
I imagine it was like something you would expect to see in a porno movie.
No, they don't.
They do.
Sorry, on. They do not.
And the balls.
Shut up, the two of you. I just want to play commentary at a goal.
Fall up and I'll go.
Fall up and I'll
go. Fuck you, can I guess?
Fuck you, can I guess?
I'm a little bit of an idealist, but having said that, I want to be like Nick.
You get the ball forward, you compete, you chase people, you close people down, you create excitement, you win balls when you shouldn't win balls, you commit yourself to the game.
Let's finish today's show in Scotland, where Celtic remain 23 points behind Rangers after losing at home to St Mirren for the first time since April 1990. A defeat described by Neil Lennon as the lowest point of his managerial career. Not that he was confining the blame to himself, mind. I want to show strength, but I need some support and performances from the players. Too many of them have been insipid this season, to say the least. Whatever walk of life you are in, you need to have a form of professional pride, especially at a club like this. That has been sadly lacking this season. Maybe the pressure of doing the 10 has been too much for them. Maybe they have just got tired of winning, tired of playing in Scotland, tired of living in Scotland. I don't know. That's a question you need to ask them, he says in a very Frank Lampard type way. It was dreadful, just not good enough. We deserved what we got today. And I regret to report to you guys that one of the underperforming players is our own Shane Duffy, who has not had a very nice time since arriving this season. We spoke to Kieran Canning at length about Duffy's low standing with the Celtic fans a while back, and it's only getting worse by the looks of things. His defending for the winning goal in this game was not good. A harmless enough looking ball has floated towards the box. Dermot, the St Mirren player, Duffy is touch tight with him, albeit sort of in a slightly bizarre position, but touch tight nonetheless as the ball arrives into the box. By the time it's hit the back of the net, he's a good, I don't know, 10 yards away, Murph.
I've never seen a situation where the defender has managed to ensure he's never farther away from the ball than he is at the exact moment the ball is struck by the striker he's supposed to be marking. So
I think at a certain point, yeah, sorry, go on, yeah.
He turns around twice while the ball is in the air, which is never a good look for a central defender. And then the striker controls it, and then all of a sudden Shane Duffy's 10 yards away. I mean, I don't know, like, he kind of falls backwards, but then just keeps going backwards. It's, yeah.
And I think he reaches a certain point where, you've described it perfectly there, but I think he reaches a certain point in his action where he realizes, okay, I'm so far away from the play now, I might as well go and cover the goals. And he sort of ambles back towards, yeah, you know, in case there's some way of clearing it off the line or if a rebound comes out to him. He's given up on essentially trying to stop the shot by that point because he's miles away from the play.
He wheels out of control like Darth Vader's TIE fighter at the end of Star Wars. That's like that. That's the only comparison I can think of in my head. That's how out of control he is as he spins off into deep space while this guy scores the goal.
It is. It's sad to see, though. In terms of, I was thinking about this morning, in terms of vastly popular Irish internationals who end up being, I think, I mean, Celtic fans can put me right in this, but he seems pretty reviled by the club's fans at the moment. He's picking up a hefty wage. He was signed as a big, it's a loan signing, but a big money loan signing. And, you know, he's a hugely, he's a big name, international player, all that kind of stuff. And it's just gone disastrously for him. So I was kind of thinking Duffy must be up there with Damien Duff at Newcastle at this point in terms of being reviled by the club fans.
Duff, you're fucking shit, man.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, the good news for Duffy is that he's only on a season-long loan, so he should be out of there by the time everything starts opening back up and therefore doesn't have to put up with people cornering him in Nando's like that Geordie fan, that Newcastle fan did to Duffer. That was it. I think that was it. He told Richie that was in the waiting area. It was in, like, you know, he walks into a Nando's, he's waiting to sit down. Lad just walks over to him, Duffer, you're shit. not great. Not great.
I don't know. I really don't know what's happening. You know, it's... you feel a bit sorry for Duffy, like you feel as though he kind of needs to get out of the firing line there, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you know, like the manager needs to sort of get that on hand. Neil Lennon, though, I think has sort of problems of his own. I don't know if he's necessarily the best support to anybody else in the current situation. You know what I mean?
He's certainly embattled himself. Yes.
Yeah, so, yeah. And I mean, you could see him say, "Oh, the players need to take responsibility." You know, he's sort of reached that stage of saying, "Well, I don't know why you're all looking at me." So it really is a complete disaster. But like, I mean, that defending against St. Mirren was just, it's not normal. You know what I mean? It's kind of like, this isn't right. Something isn't right here. So I just wish him the best of luck in sort of getting things back together. Because I mean, you know, these things sort of snowball. Celtic fans have obviously decided this guy's, and you know, the kind of the meme is like, this guy's the worst player ever to play for Celtic, you know, that which he's not. Like, I mean, his performances have been terrible, but like, he's not as bad as those performances. So why this is happening, I don't know, but it is something that would have, you'd have to be sort of concerned for his career. I mean, he does have a contract till 2023, which is, you know, the only, it's the only positive, really, at this point in time.
Okay, full round of Premier League games in midweek on the World Service. We will chat to you then, if you're signed up, that is. Thanks, Ken.
Thank you, Owen.
Thanks, Murph.
Thanks, Owen. Thanks, Ken.
Thank you, Kieran.
I just let you get it. You took a pause there, Owen, but you know what you're doing. I trusted you to come through for me there.
Dramatic pause. Well done. Thanks, yeah, well done, for listening. We'll talk to you during the week. Take care.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com. A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
It is not war and death and famine. It's not that at all. It's the opposite of that. It's to persuade the world outside of that. That's why sport's important.